Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
I'm here to help.
On August 21st,
we have a story.
Mutiny arrives on the big screen.
Who are you?
It is, trust me.
Jason Statham stars in the action movie to end your summer.
What do you want?
Vengeance.
Mutiny. Rated R.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? Guys,
you want a cup of Jawa juice?
I'm gonna make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
I'm the Joker, baby.
Welcome to The Long Take, aka LCB episode 97. Today, me and the Gooch, plus Enrique. Enrique, big anime fan, because today we're doing a review of Suzume. Thanks for being here, Enrique.
Thanks for having me on. I was hesitant to come on, as last time I was here, I was dragged through the mud through my horror draft pick.
That's right.
But I felt very redeemed after, I forget who it was, like Roper, whoever, whatever.
Richard Roper, yeah.
Yeah, said The Others was like his favorite horror movie. So I'm very honored to be back. I'm coming back strong.
Yeah, and this is like a what do you call it, like a specialty category one,
for
I feel
sure.
Like, and it's like, us two, you, and like Jake Bass are the only anime fans here.
Public.
Yeah. Public.
I think there's a lot more.
I think there's
a lot more here than watch anime. Like, or they've watched it and they don't realize what they're watching is anime.
That one intern, Jack Coogan or Coogan, do you know what I'm talking about?
No idea.
Does the rundown, bigger, blonder?
You're describing quite a few people here.
That's
Manoli's a big anime fan.
Manoli, that's true. Manoli's a big anime fan, but like very few open out their anime fans. So I feel like we have a good crew for this one because Suzume was awesome. It's breaking like every single record in Japanese like movie theater.
Yeah, it's like what?
Animated movies.
It's the third highest grossing movie
of
all time out of Japan.
Crazy. And I'm sure it's probably going to break some sort of domestic record here. Like I went and saw it the other day and we're pretty deep into the run now. Packed theater.
Yeah.
Packed theater. It's crazy. some guy, I was going to tell us the story the other day. A lot of white guys with Asian girlfriends there, which I was part of that
Did
crew.
Did you drag your Asian girlfriend there?
She wanted to go see it. I was like, I'm going to see Suzume. And she's like, oh, I'd go see it. She loves Studio Ghibli movies. And we go there, and I swear to God, every one of them gave me like the Jeep wave. What's up?
What is the Jeep wave for white guys with Asian girlfriends?
It's like, yeah, you know what's up. And I'm like, I'm not one of you. We're not the same. This is not what we are.
Welcome in, brother.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, don't confuse me as one of you. Suzume just absolutely destroying the box office. We're going to do that. Plus, we're going to do an anime movie draft, including OVAs. We did
talk
about that a little bit later.
Yeah.
It's important to include them.
Come on.
Yeah.
Got to include the – I still don't really – I don't understand what OVA even stands for.
I never looked it up. I just knew what the general idea of it was.
It's like original video or something, but it doesn't really make sense. I think every video is original that they put out.
Yeah. I know in theory what it is. I never even tried to look up what the acronym meant. But before those, we also have – you have three mini news items that we're going to hit. The first is that there was a Twilight series announced – No platform yet.
I'd call that a big news item.
Well, yeah, I guess. But like, it doesn't have a platform yet. Super early stage. Just could just be canceled. You never know. I think Lionsgate owns the IP on it. And they're just like, they're going to design it and then sell it to whatever studio or to whatever streaming platform or channel, I guess. Twilight. I was never a Twilight lover or hater. I feel like it was very popular to be like, oh, fucking Twilight's stupid. Oh, it's dumb movies of girls. I have no feelings on this one way or the other.
It's the White Sox Dave.
White Sox Dave
guaranteed. He was one of those that hated it. He hated Justin Bieber's haircut and he hated Twilight.
Yep. I just never was big into it. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't read it. I mean, it was everywhere.
Yeah.
Maybe I had a Team Jacob shirt. Maybe I didn't, but I wasn't too big into the movies at the end of the day.
I always heard the books were really good.
So funny story about me is in seventh grade.
you had
sisters. I had a English teacher who really shaped my life, especially in my taste in women down the road. Red hair, very sultry voice, and I was in love.
You were dating
head over heels.
The mayor's assistant from Powerpuff Girls?
Yes.
Could not see her from the neck up, but she was great.
No, but you could see her coming from a mile away.
Yeah.
Man, she had some hips. But she was reading the Twilight book, so I was like, All right. Well, want to talk to her? I'm going to read the Twilight books. Yeah. I've read all four of them. Like first book, it was kind of like a, all right, this is just my foot in the door. And then I was like, fuck, I'm in it. I'm in it now.
Yeah.
Read them all.
They were good?
I mean, pretty spicy. I mean, I was in it. Yeah. New Moon kind of stunk. But outside of that, yeah. And then it kind of went off the rails towards the end when you get into the baby territory. Mm-hmm. She has like a baby and then her ex-boyfriend falls in love with it somehow. Yeah. The baby.
He imprints
onto the baby. Yes, it's very strange.
The baby in the movie
that part, I can't believe made it, like, it was a thing that happened. Like, yeah. Someone wrote that. The books, I think, are kind of like good, bad.
Yes.
Like, yes. Very, very enjoyable. But like, are these well written? I really don't think so. But like, I'm going to have the best time.
Is it, which way is it? One or... Is it 50 Shades of Grey was fanfic off of Twilight, or was Twilight fanfic off of 50 Shades? One of the two, they have like a weird relationship with each other.
I think 50 Shades came out, well, it obviously came out after Twilight, so it would have to be that way, right? The books?
I don't know.
Me and my mom, we share a Kindle account, and she read with her book club 50 Shades of Grey. And I was like, oh, fuck it, I'll give it a shot. And like the first... Like, I don't know, 25% of it, like, nothing's happening. Like, they're just setting shit up. I'm like, okay, this is, like, fine or whatever. And then, like, you just hit a line where it's like, Mr. Gray, enter my pussy. And it's just like, now I don't really want to read this anymore. Like, I'm more of a visual guy with these things.
That's exactly how they wrote it, too. Enter my pussy.
Like, I swear to God, it was as, like, blunt as that at points.
That's wild, because most literatica, they dance around it with words I didn't even know existed.
Yeah, exactly. Like, enter my whispering eye or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, bullshit like that. Shout out role models.
Speaking of literatica, one of my friends told the weirdest story. Not the weirdest, just the wildest thing to admit. He was 16 in Shanghai with his parents, and they were coming back. He was at the airport, horny as hell, wanted to jerk off at the airport. Couldn't access porn on his phone, so he pulled out his Kindle, downloaded some literatica, went to the bathroom, and jacked off to his Kindle.
Jesus Christ, that's worse. That's way worse.
Admitted this sober.
Wait, why? Why
this is not Dana Beer's book.
Like the internet laws or something?
Yeah, he said something like he couldn't get through, like, I guess the airport Wi-Fi.
Oh, no. But he could get onto it for Kindle downloads?
Yes.
Jesus Christ, that's dark.
But this episode has been brought to you by Amazon and Kindle.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jeff Bezos, keeping us nutting wherever we are.
Use code LCB for one free month.
But as far as the Twilight series goes, the movies, like you said, just... I don't even think they were good, bad. They were just a weird cultural moment where you actually had like talented actors. Because
Robert Pattinson later,
Robert Pattinson's like one of the most sought after lead actors, and Kristen Stewart's carved out a really nice career for herself. So you have like talented actors, and they're just in this really trashy YA franchise.
The only one that didn't go on to do anything was Taylor Lautner. He kind of just like...
I kind of feel bad for him.
You know, that movie franchise, especially the first one, you know, it's categorized as an indie film. Like, it's
They didn't have like legit budget in the first?
Yeah, they had no budget for the first.
That's so crazy considering how popular the book was.
And the first one's the best one.
Yeah, but it's technically an indie film. It doesn't really fall in like the budget range of like a
film. It's when they went mainstream is when they stunk.
Yeah.
When
they sold out.
The weird baby CGI.
That baby thing was weird as hell.
Renesmee. But yeah, so I mean, if they're going to redo it, this honestly makes more sense to redo than like a Harry Potter, because whereas Harry Potter actually has like good movies to fall back on, Twilight doesn't. But is the source material even there to justify this? And are people still reading Twilight? Is there a Twilight fandom still around? I don't think so. I think they grew out of it.
Yeah, it's where we are in a really interesting like book movie renaissance, because right now, I mean, Hunger Games is so big.
And they own that too, Lionsgate.
Yeah, so I feel like we really left like that young adult YA like dystopian romance era, but I think this work may be headed back. And
yeah, they're doing that and doing Aragon, Percy Jackson.
Oh, that's nice.
I mean, they're redoing all of these. Yeah. So do YA books not get made anymore?
The genre ended kind of like after it got oversaturated.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think maybe because these were hits, they're like, let's use what we know worked the first time.
Yeah.
I feel like they did like, I actually did read Divergent, Allegiant, and then the third one. Mm-hmm. But I feel like they really ruined it with the movies.
Yeah, the movies were super YA. And like that, you get that feeling, I think, in a lot of movies and shows that also kind of failed. Like what was that Rosamund Pike series on Prime that everyone was like, this is the best fantasy series of all time?
It's Wheel of Time.
Wheel of Time.
I loved Wheel of Time.
You liked the show?
I loved the show.
I thought it was... Well, I think maybe it was just comparatively to other fantasy stuff, but I was like, this is so YA and like...
Also so intrigued to find out it's like technically like Lord of the Rings universe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, oh, it's really adds a whole like other layer to this. But yeah. I loved Wheel of Time.
I was like so... I don't know. Because I mean, it just got too hyped up because when that show came out, everyone was like, hey, this is like... Lord of the Rings, like era, like level type fantasy stuff, and like I was like, this is not.
Oh, I just pressed it because I was like, oh, kind of like Rosamund Pike, and then she was really great on the show.
Yeah, she was awesome, no question about it. But then like everyone else, I'm like, what are you? What's happening here? Even like the bad guy in that I don't remember his name. He's a good actor though too.
I think every single YA property should just moving forward. I guess the network is gone now, but CW should just do them all.
Yeah,
because CW. Say what you want, but they kind of nail the trashy but good television. Like all their shows do kind of fall in line with YA, like even though it's not technically. Like you can do what's the Archie series? The Riverdale. Riverdale's really YA, the 100, the originals, Vampire Diaries, Pretty Little Liars. It's all like YA stuff.
It goes all the way back to like Smallville, even like back in the day. Like it's all the same branding and show style.
I think if you wanted to basically like take all these properties like they're like Aragon or like whatever, all these other ones, Twilight and all that stuff, like they have cool or at least interesting lore and all that stuff. If you could take that world and build it into something better than a YA quality movie or show, then yeah you could do something cool, no doubt about it. It's just more like the execution versus the actual source material that is like what the issue was, I guess. But yeah, I don't know, I have no feelings whatsoever on a Twilight series. I think someone blogged it. I gave it to someone else. But yeah, I'm 30.
It was Keegs.
Keegs blogged it. That makes sense. Next, Jonathan Majors, PR and management firm, dropped him.
Yeah.
And let's note that does not happen unless you have done something that is irrecoverable. Like if you're at this peak of an actor, when you're set to star in the next 20 Marvel movies and all these projects, Creed, all that crap, like no firm will drop you unless they know that whatever issues you have are irrecoverable. More victims came forward to help the DA's investigation. He's done. He's toast.
Yeah.
He's just absolutely cooked, toast.
Which is crazy because he was 2 months ago.
Top of the world.
I mean, the next big thing in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. Like that's like he was like A-list, like. Big actors happening right then. That was Jonathan Majors.
Yeah.
The U.S. military
hired
him to be their spokesperson.
Yeah, that was a little tongue-in-cheek, I feel.
I mean, U.S. Army spokesperson getting accused of a domestic violence situation. Yeah. Respect the troops, though. It doesn't really affect anything. I mean, Marvel-wise, I guess that's the big question in everybody's head now. Marvel still hasn't dropped them, which is strange, but...
They haven't said anything. That's the weirder part.
Yeah.
They haven't been like, we're waiting to see what comes out. They're just like, zilch, nothing coming out.
I mean, they fired James Gunn for tweets from 2011.
Yeah.
So, the only thing I think it affects is Loki season 2, right? Because they've already filmed the whole thing with him.
Oh. Wait, was he a character in season 2?
Yes. So remember, Loki comes back at the very end, and it's all the king statues and stuff.
If it's filmed, you're fine. Like,
it's just gonna be awkward.
Yeah,
like with the Flash shit and all that. Like, because that's coming. Flash movie's coming out soon. It's apparently the best thing in the world. It might be a little awkward, but like, I guess. But also, he wasn't. That's not as bad as domestic abuse, like breaking into people's homes while you're high on basalt or whatever the fuck he was doing. But yeah, I think that like the good thing, I guess, at least for the Marvel universe sake, like that Kang the Conqueror is like so multiverse bent. Like you could just switch with another actor. And I don't really think it makes a huge deal. It's like you're switching Iron Man like 10 movies in or like someone more grounded. It's like a super supernatural character.
Yeah.
Just flip them. Who cares? And then the last thing was Godzilla X Kong, I guess. Dropped a teaser. I don't know what the fuck's going on here. I'm not the biggest Universal Monsters fan or anything like that. I think it was mostly after Godzilla.
Dude, Skull Island fucking ruled. Don't tell me Skull Island. Skull Island was awesome.
Definition of a fine movie. They bizarro that Brie Larson's in that, by the way. Stop doing big franchise properties. Just stop. No more. No Fast and Furious. No Marvel.
Was wild to see her in Fast and Furious.
Just do a smaller movie. Do Room 2. I don't care.
The number of actors the Fast franchise get that are like respected.
Yeah.
I was in shock when I saw the trailer in the theater.
Yeah.
I mean, they got Helen Mirren in there.
It's fucking bizarro. It's so weird.
You think that they're like all these actors talk to each other and they kind of like joke about it? They're like, yeah, I'm going to do a Fast movie. Fuck it.
Money's money. But I feel like Brie Larson has enough of a bag now where she can just like do something actually good. But yeah, this trailer was like a little teaser. Saw a bunch of skulls and then some orangutan of some kind.
I don't know.
Even an orange hair.
Dude, I don't understand the monster verse like lore. I know Mothra.
My favorite.
Mm-hmm. Ghidorah.
Yep.
I like Ghidorah. And I think that's where my knowledge kind of stops. But I'm all for it. It's a big monkey. And say what you will, but I think the Fast franchise is way more ridiculous than the MonsterVerse franchise.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's more enjoyable. I think the MonsterVerse franchise is, like, batting average is higher.
I definitely agree with that. Yes. But that's also much smaller sample size, whatever that's worth. The OG Godzilla, not particularly great. Like, the one...
The Bryan Cranston one, yeah.
Not particularly great. Godzilla, King of the Monsters, not really great either. Remember they had Millie Bobby Brown in that?
Yeah.
And she had, like, two words to say.
Brian Tyree Henry. Yeah. They ran around and...
And they gave her two lines.
He was a podcaster.
Yeah, he was a podcaster.
Podcaster representation.
And then, was it... Skull Island, like, sure, yeah, that's solid. But, like, even the last one, like, Godzilla vs. Kong, felt like... I don't know.
It had its moments.
Yeah, it definitely had moments, but it could have been better.
Now they're mates.
Yeah, now they are in fact mates. They were angry at each other, and now they're mates. Yeah, that's the general news we got today. We're going to save the rest for the Tuesday episode. Oh, yeah. And we should introduce, we have an interview that we meant to air last week that we forgot to interview. So we'll air that now. I think
we didn't forget. We actually planned this because Evil Dead Rise is coming out this weekend.
Oh, that's right. It was a planned
We definitely not forget to air it.
Yeah.
And we planned this. So
Bruce Campbell coming at you right now.
Hey, it's Fran from Chicks in the Office. It's peak summer. One plan is turning into five, but trust I'll be wearing Abercrombie to all of them. Catch me in their Sloan tailored pant at work and then the happy hour right after, the Dylan dress for dinner plans when you want something easy but still put together, and of course, their denim, because Abercrombie denim just works, no matter the plan. Keep up with the pace of summer without overthinking it. Shop in the app, online, and in stores.
All right, joined for the first time ever by... The wonderful, wearing a big fan of your jacket, sir. Bruce Campbell joining us here today. I'm chilly.
This is pretty tame today. This is just good old-fashioned corduroy today.
That's nice corduroy. Brown corduroy is a lost art.
Actually, Ken Jack has a nice jacket on, too, I just realized.
It's this new. I already know where it's from. I got
to throw an Instagram ad. I'm a sucker. I'm the people that, like, make them money.
We need people like you, Jack.
We have a lot to talk to you about, but you have a big tour coming up, Bruce-O-Rama tour, starting April 5th, which is, geez, that's a month away. It's March already. Your tour hits the road, 22 city theater tour, trivia, interactive stuff, showing one of your classic movies, whatever it may be. What can a fan expect attending your tour? I've seen plenty of views from the tour on YouTube, especially a lot. You're a great fan Q&A person, which we'll get into in a second, especially stoking the flames of rumors and such.
The idea is really just to – my job for 22 cities is to punch fans in the face, metaphorically speaking, just to torment them for coming out and spending their hard-earned cash. At the end of the night, they walk away going, well, what the hell was that all about? But, you know, that's kind of the idea. We want to have fun. We want to mix it up. I started just touring recently, doing different stuff of either watching with one of these things or whatever. And I've also toured with a game show. So we thought, well, let's go nuts, man. Let's create, you know, a hybrid, because nobody wants to sit their asses in a seat for that much, that long these days. So the first part is last fan standing. My partner, Steve Celery, and I sort of created this from what was originally a military trivia show that I hosted. And I said to Steve, you know, if you bring this into my world, we could do something with this. You just change the question. So we thought, let's ditch all the history questions, you know, boring geography crap, just the important stuff, you know, like what, you know, Ant-Man, Iron Man, Superman, Spider-Man, you know, and I have some street cred in those worlds and those genre worlds. It's an easy segue for me to tell a boring story, you know, that relates to one of the questions of the thing. But it's kind of fun the way it's structured, that everybody comes in. Everybody can play with their little device and nobody has any leg up. No one is pre-qualified. You could be sitting next to the winner. And now, and what's cool, because we're sort of syncing up with the opening of the next Evil Dead movie, we actually have crap to give the winners. That was our big, you know, before we'd have a game. Hey, you want a certificate of useless knowledge, you know? And so they're like, thanks. Now we actually have some good swag from Evil Dead Rise that we're going to give the winners of the show. So it cooks down to one winner, and everyone worships them. And it might get laid that night, you know, who knows? And then take a break. Some of these venues have a place you can get a beverage. So you take a break, then I'll come out and do sort of an extended intro for the movie of their choosing, of whatever this promoter wants. One of the Golden Moldies. And I'll insult some more people and maybe give out some mileage money, some gas money. And then go to the next city. I'm an idiot. This is, you know, 22 cities in 30 days. It's a fool's errand, but I haven't really done a bus tour before. So I gotta work on like card games, you know, because you can't, it's not all about partying 24/7. You'll never get to the city number 5. So it'll be a very fascinating tour.
Do you have like a go-to road trip snack? I feel like you need one for a bus tour now.
It's mostly caffeine. You know, is your snack. Hey, let me have a snack. You know, they got 87 of these different kinds of crazy bars that you could live off of now. So I've always got a stash in my pockets. If I get a little low energy, just eat one of these composite things and a banana, and you're off to the races.
I like the idea of you having like roadies, just like some guy being like, yeah, I spent 30 hard days on the road as a roadie for Bruce Campbell.
Oh boy, that Campbell. Oh, he's a hard partier, man. Once he gets going, there's no stopping.
I was with Motley Crue for years, but Motley Crue didn't hold a candle to Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, the funny thing is, but we don't need roadies because our podiums are like, they weigh about 8 ounces each. You know, we just set these things up and dump them in and go. So I think we are the roadies, by the way.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
I want to meet the guy who says that the Reading PA screening of Evil Dead was better than the Dallas, Texas one. He's like, nah, you don't even know what it was like.
Yeah.
You don't even know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that one hit was different. We have a trivia show at our company. I host it. Ken Jack is on one of the teams. Do you, I'm in the thick of currently, and we do mostly pop culture and like some smart stuff, very rarely smart people stuff. but I'm in the hot seat. People be mad at me about the question difficulty. Do you ever get people mad at you about questions saying, hey, we're not, you know, you wrote that wrong, or I think this should be the right answer? You ever get those back?
My daughter-in-law said, hey, guys, I saw one of your shows, and no offense, old guys, but I think we can do some better questions. So I just challenged her. I went, okay, I'll pay you. Give me 20 questions that you think are better than what we've been asking, you know, more timely. What? There's no way a geezer like me can keep up. It's like the, you know, the March Madness of entertainment. There's no way to keep up with all this shit. There's so much stuff on the air and streaming and all that. So, I got some more badass questions coming that I don't know the answer to any question, by the way. I look at this and go, oh, that was the answer? Oh, cool. Yeah.
See, that's what you have that leg up on me. I don't. So I take all the shrapnel. I wish I was in your shoes. I'd rather not know.
Yeah. Well, have fun with it. That's the important part.
Which city are you most excited for on the tour? I feel like there's got to be a spot. I know you're going back home. You're going back to Michigan at one point, right? Like, I would assume.
Oh, Michigan's always good. Royal Oak, where I was born, you know, that kind of crap. The hometown is always fun. Greenville, I've never been there. My partner's from there, Greenville, South Carolina. Nice, apparently nice little town. Cincinnati, been to a bunch of times. Pelham, Tennessee, never been there before. The booming metropolis of Pelham, Tennessee. Then you got Atlanta, because you got to kind of do, it's weird. We're kind of east of the Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
Rockies / Mississippi. You got to pick your territories. But like Reading, Pennsylvania, that's, I've only been there playing Monopoly.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah.
You know, other places I just haven't been to in a while, like Patchogue, New York, which is kind of Long Island.
Yeah, that's right near where I grew up.
Pittsburgh, Buffalo. Buffalo, my relatives are all from Geneseo, New York. So I always like that part of the world. It'll probably be horrible weather. Pittsburgh, Cleveland. Cleveland because it's like my crumbling city of Detroit. You know, you just
I'm a Browns fan. It's like
solidarity with the Rust Belt cities like Pittsburgh and things like that. Yeah, Royal Oak, Chicago, and Des Moines. You know, you got to hit those. Yeah, the Corn Belt. You got to get in there and do Kansas City, where my mother was born. So that should be fun. Then we finish off Oklahoma City, Dallas. I think we end in Dallas, but a lot of the venues I've never been to before. And what's really cool is there some of these old creaky theaters are still hanging on, and they got the balcony, and some of them were old opera houses. So I'm just as excited to see the different venues, even more so than the city. Yeah. Because some of these, you know, I've been to old theaters like Seattle. They still had Harry Houdini's trapdoor that he had made for his show. They had no reason to get rid of it. You know, just crap like that. Just the history is, I love it.
Yeah, I got a trivia fact for you, a geographical one, one that blew my mind when I first heard it. You mentioned both Detroit and Atlanta. Did you know that Detroit is further east than Atlanta?
Okay.
It makes no sense to me. Detroit is...
It's from the north, too.
Yeah, it just makes no... But the fact that Detroit, like...
Well, where I live in Oregon is the same height as Michigan.
That's true.
But they have completely different weather. They're dying right now of Arctic exposure. And we're getting, you know, snow flurries.
Lead with that fact at one of your shows, the crowd will roar. Trust me. Yes. They'll go absolutely crazy.
I want to talk about... I no longer live in the Midwest. Hi, folks. Pleasure to be here.
I do want to bring, we got to talk about some of these movies that you're obviously going to talk about at your shows and show. And you, we haven't, I don't know how many people we have truly talked to who have worked with Sam Raimi. And we love to really kind of get in the mind of someone who knows these directors really well. You know them as well as anyone. Sure. What is it from your end, from someone who's been in the movies, knows them well, that...
Oh, it's hilarious now because everyone's kissing Sam's ass. Oh, I walk onto these film sets, you know, for my little one-day part, and people are like, oh, Mr. Raimi, right. Oh, no, he said to do this that way. I'm like, oh, shut up. It's just Sam. We used to play with dolls in the hallway of our eighth grade, you know, middle school. I mean, what are you talking about? And so, the crew, Sam trash talks. That's how he directs. He would go, hey, Bruce, that was a great take for somebody else's movie. You know, or he'd go, man, Bruce, that was great. If this was a miniseries, yep, just great. And so then sometimes he would make fun of me, and then I would trash talk his ability as a director. Well, if you can't get the performance, then maybe we should get somebody else to direct this scene. And it's like crew members, like there's a hush of like, this day player is talking back to Sam Raimi. So because none of these guys are all 22, they don't know any of the fact that we've been making horror movies twice as long as they've been alive. So it's you can't blame them for not knowing the history, but that's the fun part. You know, Sam always had a crazy imagination. We could never afford the shots that he wanted to do. Now, okay, finally, Doctor Strange, he can go crazy. He can do whatever he wants, but he's still Sam. He's the best director I've ever worked with, just because of his technical skill, his ability to be a leader. He has this great way about him that crew will do anything for him, because he loves movies. He still loves it, you know. And he and I are, you know, we're in there the geezer phase of our career now. But it's great that the old guys can still get in there and chip away, because you know we know all the moves. That's why they never throw the old guys away, man. Right when we know the most and we haven't lost it yet. This is so they need us. You know, guys like me, we're in the wrong position to like direct and act now, because we're the wrong everything now. But like with a director, sure, let's get some new folks in there. But they should have a geezer like us tagging along, going, are you sure about that? Geez, I don't know about that. That might screw you up for time. It might take too long to do that. All right. Okay, yeah, whatever you want to do. I think there should be a mentoring program.
Yeah, that would be awesome, especially because there's so many young horror movies now.
Yeah, they get kicked out the door, but it's okay. I understand. Time for the new wave.
You guys definitely learn from experience. The production of The Evil Dead, it's always a fun read because it just seems like a beautiful disaster trying to make that movie. What was your favorite disaster or part of the shoot for that movie?
It's just an entire montage of disasters that, you know, you didn't know till about two movies later when you look back and go, oh, that's how you do this. Oh, wow, we wasted all day. Well, like, we would sometimes take 12 hours to get one shot. It was tricky stuff, and you got no money to do it, so how do you do it? You got time. Time is your best friend. So, you know, everything took long. There was no resources, so the blood would stick to me because it was a Karo syrup-based blood. Mm-hmm. And I'd have to really walk into the house that we were renting with the clothes on, get the shower going, and step in with the clothes on. And then over time, I'd feel it sickeningly loosen up. Oh. And I could slowly peel my clothes off like I was sort of diving for clams all day or something. And that was normal. It's only years later where you go, God, I would never do that. I would never do any of that again.
Or the context, so too, I always heard young, rough.
Yeah, you're young and foolish. What do you know, really?
Yeah, I always heard the contacts are rougher. They were like really thick color contacts.
Well, yeah, originally for the monsters we used, you know, not digital. It was glass lenses. You know, they were hard lenses, and it blocked off the oxygen to your eyes, so you could only have them in for like 15 minutes at a time, and you can only do it about four or five times a day. And this is like shoving Tupperware, like a dog bowl, you know, up in your eyes. Jeez. Ridiculous. And then now, by the way, you're doing fight scenes with knives and shit, and the actor's blind. They see this milky pink nothing. They can't see anything.
Jesus.
Let's do it. Safety last.
Exactly. A lot of people probably don't know this, at least from, I don't know how much of our families know this, but the Coen brothers helped edit The Evil Dead, and you went on to obviously do movies with them as well. What's the deal with you and brothers? You seem to gravitate towards sets of brothers. Between Sam and Ted.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Well, Joel was the assistant editor of Evil Dead. And Sam let him cut a specific sequence, which was this chainsaw montage. Sam shot all the components, so it wasn't like it wasn't there to put together, but it shows that Joel is a filmmaker. And he wanted to not just be an assistant editor. And these guys would always talk about wanting to make a feature. They asked us how we did it. We shot a test movie in like super 8mm. They went, let's shoot a test in 35mm. We could show it to investors in theaters like the movie was done, like a trailer. They did a 2-minute trailer for the movie. And I was in their trailer as the guy who was originally crawling through the cornfield at night that they were hitting with a shovel. Did they put me in the movie? No, but I'm in the trailer to help them raise the money. That's fine. You're welcome. You're welcome, Coen brothers. And then, you know, there were a couple of parts that made sense. Mm-hmm. And the Hudsucker was really the best for me because I got to work with, you know, the powerhouse of Jennifer Jason Leigh, who, you know, guys like me, I get pretty nervous because you go, oh, crap, she's just never going to blow a line ever. She's like this amazingly professional actress. And it was one of the first times I actually got really nervous.
Oh, that's awesome. Her,
because she was a machine.
You got a couple of lines in it too, yeah.
Is there an idea outside of Spider-Man? Because the Spider-Man stuff has been endlessly covered and talked about, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But outside of Spider-Man stuff, is there one idea that you and Sam Raimi have maybe like talked about, or like you've had an idea you just kind of just haven't gotten to it yet, or something that just hasn't happened outside of some of the obvious stuff?
More tragically, Sam made a movie in college at Michigan State University, which just unfortunately had a shooting there. Mm. It was a story called The Happy Valley Kid about a nerdy guy who reads comic books called The Happy Valley Kid, is picked on and bullied and dumped by his girlfriend and mocked by his professors. And he loses it and becomes the rawhide kid. This mythical character. And he takes out everybody, professors. And it's the real professors from his classes and pals and students. And he showed it on campus. It cost $700 to make, and it made $5,000 at the box office because everyone kept hearing, What's this movie we got to see? What's this? I want to, and they would clap when the teachers got blown away by the rawhide kid. And you could never, ever, ever make that movie today in a million years. And it's actually one of Sam's most amazing movies. There are sequences in that movie that will destroy you. Like he, all of a sudden, that's when I went, oh, Sam's like a real filmmaker. Like this is not just kids fucking around on weekends at college. He's actually doing something different here. So it's a secret tragedy that I'll always have because we worked on it, and just a crazy piece of filmmaking that is going to be, it's just gone now.
Yeah, that's crazy. Wow.
Yeah, that'll be like the, who, what was the one that did the Clown Holocaust movie? Who was the guy who did that?
Clown Holocaust.
Jerry Lewis. Jerry Lewis made the Clown Holocaust movie. That was it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that never saw the light of day. Never made it.
You know what has the best tagline is Shakes the Clown? You remember that movie, Shakes the Clown, with Bobcat Goldthwait?
It sounds familiar,
The tag, it's one of the reviews is, it's the Citizen Kane of alcoholic clown movies.
I like that, though. They set the bar. Yeah, that's...
alcoholic clown movies.
We mentioned Spider-Man, obviously. Which cameo in the Spider-Man movies for you was the most fun to film? Like, which one of them was just like, damn, that was a good time?
Well, I try and educate people on what pivotal means, right?
Of course.
Insignificant cameo, sure. You can say that on one hand. Part one, he wants to be called a human spider.
Yeah.
So my character named Spider-Man. So if I wasn't in it, this billion-dollar franchise would be called The Human Spider. Nailed it.
Great point.
Second one, he wants to get in to see Mary Jane perform in a play for the very first time. I'm the snooty usher. I won't let him in because he's late and it'll spoil the illusion. So I am technically the only character who has ever defeated Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. That's true.
I mean, you can make that case. You try and prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. Part three... How often do superheroes come to mortals for help? Like never. The seventh of never. That's when they come to help. He comes to me for help in marrying Mary Jane, proposed to him. And do I help him? Not really, because he was kind of a dick to me in the first two movies. So that's kind of how that goes. And by the way, may I say something about Doctor Strange, the newest Sam Raimi blockbuster? My character put an end to Doctor Strange.
Huh. With the pizza? Oh, okay.
Just think about it.
I'm putting it together in
my
head.
You have to watch it again.
Majorly consequential cameos. Yeah.
Wait to the end of the credits. You may have to.
It's a misnomer. Yeah.
The run of your, I guess, rumor mill with Spider-Man 4 is one of my favorite rumor mill.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's a good
theories one. That, because I've seen over the years, I've seen clips of you know talking about it, whether it's at Comic-Con or something. You're like, no. And then he came out and he talked about it when Doctor Strange came out. He's like, yeah, it was going to happen. That turned your world upside down in terms of just you being able to deny it, because now you have to just be like, well, yeah, I guess that's true. I feel like you're having fun with it for a while.
Well, the funny thing is, with these Marvel movies, they're so mercurial. Like, people are like, hey, are you in the new Doctor Strange? I couldn't actually tell them yes or no, because the likelihood of my entire scene getting cut out was about 50-50, based on the stories that they have to tell. You know, in the middle, while Sam is shooting this movie, other characters have been introduced, and it's like, hi, Mr. Raimi, there's some new scenes that you need to shoot for Doctor Strange. He's like, but I have all these other scenes. No, these are some new ones. Thank you, Mr. Raimi. You know, so these movies keep going like this, and then other scenes go, because the whole storyline, they'll ditch. Because this is not one movie. I'm starting to realize this. It is a mini series of movies. It's just an endless series. There's no beginning, there's no end. So it was weird to, so a lot of things I couldn't confirm or deny that I was in these. I couldn't say yes or no. So sometimes I'm a liar, sometimes I'm not. Mysterio you know, nobody made the call. Hey, Bruce, we're going to shoot next Tuesday. Mysterio, what do you say, man? Are you in? There was none of those phone calls. It's just you heard it online. Sure, the storyboard looks kind of like me, you know, weird Mysterio guy turning around. So, the part went to the dreamy Jake Gyllenhaal. I mean, I'm good with that. The chicks love him.
Hey, yeah, they always cast someone who looks like you from the storyboard art. That's pretty, exactly. That sounds good to me. Yeah.
Birds of a feather.
But the other thing too is when you go on these tours and you go in to the Comic-Con stuff and you get those questions, some are, Mysterio one had merit. There was merit to it. But have you ever gotten one that you're like, where on earth did you fucking get that from? Like what world did you get that rumor?
Oh no, there's at least one or two questions per session where you go, are you mentally disturbed?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get questions. There's no doubt that there is a certain percentage of fandom that are willing to stand in line for 2 hours and repeat all the lines of dialogue you've ever said. There is an element of uniqueness to these people. And sometimes they're living in a world that they don't even know that the question they're asking doesn't really take place on this world. Mm-hmm. So, and sometimes halfway through a snarky answer, I'll actually realize, oh, that's actually a person who kind of has special needs.
Yes, you need to, yeah.
And so I'd have to go, oh crap, I can't go full snark because it was a really weird, dumb question. But if you go full snark, then you realize,
Yeah.
So I have to read the, I have to be careful reading the audience.
The snark meter is an underrated thing to have. You really got to, if you're going to go full snark, you really got to read that room. It's not easy.
we have various sayings when we go to different cities. Different cities have fans that are the opposite of Chatty Cathy. They'll wait in line for 7 hours and you shake their hand and there's no eye contact even. Mm-hmm. And the father's with him. And the father goes full Chatty Cathy. And so you ask yourself, like, what the hell's going on here? And the one father said, thank you for this character, and this character. I was like, what do you mean? He goes, my son and I, because my son is autistic, we have problems communicating. And he goes, one day he was spouting some line of something, and I answered him in a character from this show, and my son went, boop. And became instantly alert, and they instantly started to connect. And so he was really thankful for the characters from these shows, because now he's got some groundwork that his son goes, oh, I can talk to my dad now through this character and these roles. So we all have to be aware that, actors, we can be destructive in our work, but sometimes the arts are mostly good. They do help people through horrible times. I've had multiple... I got a high school tassel in the mail from a kid who goes, I'm sending this to you because if I hadn't seen this or that, I would have killed myself.
Mm.
And because I saw this movie and that movie, it gave me more of a will to live. So thank you. So here's my high school tassel.
That's pretty great.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So we do have to be careful in the arts. We can be hurtful. Social media can be just devastatingly mean and cruel.
Oh, it is the worst.
Mm-hmm. We got to kind of figure that whole thing too. Well, I learned early on, man, careful what you dip your little toes into. If you're ever going to get serious, boy, you better wear the thick skin suit the next day. Mm-hmm. If you have a political issue, some kind of something you really fight for, or some cause, some environmental thing, you better put your dukes up. So for me, my Instagram is like pictures of my cats, time-lapse shots and stuff. And, all the studios are like, hey, Bruce, we need you to post this on your Instagram. I'm like, I don't do commercial stuff on Instagram. I do dumb photographs.
Yeah.
So Twitter, sure. But Twitter, one time I made a comment about one thing and immediately I was corrected about my facts. And they're like, shut the fuck up, Campbell. Go act. Shut up and act. I mean, oh, my God. It was so quick. I went, okay. So Twitter for me is... hey, here's a link to buy a ticket. Hey.
I
mean, that is it. and Faceplant, I really just, it just mirrors my Twitter account. I don't even, Facebook. I think I went down one rabbit hole and went, okay, well, I'm just going to join QAnon if I keep reading this.
It's, I always joke, if you ever think you're just dipping your toe into something on social media, you are unknowingly diving all the way in. You can never, especially on Twitter. If you think it's going to be an in and out situation, it almost never is. You're just lost.
Yeah. I got one last question I got
to
give you before we let you go.
Know the truth.
Yes. I got one last question we have to give you before we let you go. I'm a massive fan of a show that you are a part of, Burn Notice. If Burn Notice ever were to get a revival, would you be in?
Oh, I'd be all over like a cheap suit. Yeah. Because the trick, guys, is to always be second fiddle. Never be the star of a show. Be number two on the call sheet. So I could be the guy that comes in and goes, hey, Mike, what'd I miss? Hey, let's go have a beer.
Yeah, Jeffrey Donovan's been doing a bunch of stuff, too. I feel like it could happen.
No, it was fun. It's about time to bring him back. Lots of new international crap you could do. Michael Weston has a lot of old enemies, and old enemies kidnapped children that they might have had together now. There's lots of possibilities there.
Yep.
I would introduce my character, Sam. I know his introduction. He would be in the middle of an Ernest Hemingway lookalike contest in Key West.
Yes.
Give me 2 months of a beard, you know, and get that. And I could win the Pappy contest. And then you get the call. Hey, Sam.
Yes.
You know, get on the boat. We're going.
Getting a call to do a full season of a production on location in Miami, I would have to be great too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad I'm not there anymore. I mean, 7 seasons of anything is too much.
I believe that.
You know, because after 5 seasons, let's face it, it's Hercules in New York City.
Yeah.
Or musical episodes, or, you know, your star is 6, so you have to shoot a clip show of all the fun memories of stuff.
Yeah, jumping the shark, basically, yeah.
Yeah, my favorite was a Tom Selleck thing. It was Magnum P.I., and he got trapped in some wreck, something collapsed, and he's on a beach, and the tide is rising. Uh-huh. So his days are numbered. So it was a whole show of him remembering the good times. Oh, gee, that was great. Da, 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 da. Then back in, the water's higher. Oh, yeah, those were great times. Then finally gets to here, and then the water lifts the log off of him because there's enough water now. So there you go.
What a vehicle for a flashback. Classic. That's amazing.
Classic my show. Favorite Magnum P.I.
Well, thanks, fellas.
Yeah, thank you very much. Check out the tour, everyone listening. And then remember the fun fact, always be second on the call sheet. I won't
always be
that.
Second on the call sheet.
Thank you very much, sir. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Dedication isn't born in the light of day. It's carved in the quiet hours before the world blinks awake. At Boar's Head, we rise with a mission to deliver craftsmanship worthy of your table. A slice of something special folded into every moment worth savoring. Because dedication means delivering only the very best. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
Thanks to Bruce Campbell. All right, now we get to do our Suzume review. Everyone knows
really
Bruce Campbell.
Emphasize that P.
The what?
Campbell.
Campbell?
Isn't there a B in there?
There's a BP.
Wait, how do
it's
you spell
it? It's not Campbell.
Campbell. Is it C-A-M-B-P?
Campbell. Yeah. Have you never seen the name like Campbell Soup?
Yeah, but I thought you say it Campbell.
You can. I don't think there's an issue.
Have I been saying this wrong my whole life?
There's a P there. That's all I'm saying. I don't think it's a silent one. It's not like a pseudonym or something. But yeah, anyway, everyone knows Bruce Campbell's a big anime fan. Huge.
You know what? It really wouldn't shock me.
If he was just like watching like Neon Genesis, like Evangelion.
On the plane?
Yeah. I mean,
maybe.
If he was watching like the OVAs of that, that would be funny.
He's watching all 30 of them.
Yeah, oh my God, man. Some of them are so bad. I was like texting that with Trill Bones the other day, just like the kind of hoops you have to go through recommending NG to anybody. Cause like, you're like, yeah, you got to watch this, but you can't watch that. And then
don't watch the
this.
Last 4 episodes. Just skip straight to end of Evangelion.
Exactly. Exactly. Anyway, Suzume made by the same guy who did Your Name and Weathering with You, Makoto Shinkai, Makoto Shinkai, really, really, really good anime director. This movie, like we said before, absolutely wrecking every money record that there is in Japan right now for animated movies. And it's also doing extremely well here. Like I mentioned before, I saw it like on a fucking Tuesday at, I think like 7 p.m., like a regular time for a movie, but like it's been in a little bit into its run, packed out theater. Very stinky.
It's wild that anime movies have really picked up in the U.S. I didn't think I'd ever see it actually happen.
Yeah, and it's awesome too because they play so much better in the theater, I think, than they do in like, especially the big ones like Demon Slayer, for example. Like Mugen Train in the theater was an awesome experience.
So good.
So fun because like everything is just so much brighter, louder. Like just everything about that experience is so much better. And like I watched it on Hulu again like a month later and I'm like, oh, this isn't that fun.
Yeah, this is just TV. Yeah. I've seen this.
So much better in the theater. But this movie, it could read the synopsis of it. I feel like we usually do and I kind of just was going to wing it, I guess. But Suzume is way too long of a synopsis. Never mind. That was just the entire plot of the movie. All right, let's do the IMDb one. And this is for people, I guess, that haven't heard about it or watched it yet. My modern action-adventure road story where a 17-year-old girl named Suzume helps a mysterious young man close doors from the other side that are releasing disasters all over Japan. About 2 hours long. I really, really, just like with those previous two movies, I really, really like this movie. I think the animation was gorgeous, which is basically a given for him. I really like the character of Suzume and how they managed to like work actual level of human emotion into a chair. Like that's very difficult.
Yeah.
And that just like, it was like an odyssey, which is like what Shinkai does in all of his movies. It's like a journey, pit stop. And like, you have to do all these like little side quest things to get to where you're going.
Yeah.
And I always love that about this, like the movies that he's done. And I think he just has like a very deep reverence for nature. Just like, you know, obviously Miyazaki. I love the whole theme of natural disasters. He had talked about how he was very affected by the 2011 earthquakes and tsunamis that caused the Fukushima disaster. And I also really like the concept of the ever after. I think the ever after was really, really, really well done. We'll talk more about some other stuff later, but I ended up on a 93 out of 100 on this, which is like just like small points behind his previous two. And I think the only reason, and someone had noted this, I think I saw on somewhere, I forget, on Twitter or whatever, that like the only reason that it is maybe worse than those previous two is that they're structurally so similar that you almost come to expect a certain thing from this movie because of those previous two. But Robbie, what'd you think?
Yeah, no, I absolutely loved it. I mean, last 10, 15 minutes, I was like, I'm going to make it through this. I'm going to be fine. And then like, what happens ends up just breaking you. And I just was like sitting there. I was like, fuck. Like, I was just kind of like blubbering. I was like, it's like dying. But yeah, no, so good. Beautiful animation. I think it is a textbook example of why the medium of animation should exist and should be on a pedestal. It's because you're able to tell stories that you just could not tell otherwise. You could not do this in live action. Mm-hmm. You simply couldn't. Like, even if you had the Avatar budget, I still think it would be damn near impossible because there's so much weirdness.
No limits to imagination in anime or animation in general.
And it's taken full advantage of here. Like you said, the chair, it's got great comedic relief in there. The dramatic beats hit well. It was really interesting. Before the movie, I was told to learn about the 2011 earthquake. And I think it made a big difference in watching it because then you kind of like know what the messaging is behind it. And that really helped break. That also contributed to me being broken at the end of it. I loved it. I've also seen people say Mikoto Shinkai is like the John Green of anime directors. It was very emotional. He follows a lot of the same story beats, but for what it's worth, it works every single time. So no need to change up the formula at this point. I'm at 95 out of 100. This is probably, I have a tough time imagining this doesn't end up as my number one animated movie of the year. I have high hopes for Across the Spider-Verse, but this will be tough to top.
Yeah, very difficult to top.
Good dub, too. Did you see it in sub or dub?
I saw it in sub.
See, I saw it in dub just because of scheduling, and it was a good dub.
I actually saw, you know what I saw the other day? When I watched Bo is Afraid, I by timing-wise, I got the captioned version of it. It was awesome.
Oh, yeah, I've done that before.
Yeah, and that was my first time ever watching like a regular movie with captions, and it was like an awesome
experience. They've had discussions really about doing that just for every movie now.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind it. Or if you, like, you have some sort of invisible one where you can wear glasses.
And
it
that would be cool.
Yeah. So, Enrique, what'd you think?
Yeah, you actually took the words out of my mouth because like the reason anime films are successful is because like the reality just exists within the art and medium. Mm-hmm. So like that was really it. Like I agree, you could not do it anywhere else. No. Two things that I really, really liked that like the director said was, so a big theme of it, especially like the door aspect of it, I've been closing something, was that we always do like opening ceremonies. We always do like events when something is big and open, but we rarely do we ever honor the closure of anything or the end of something. So it becomes like in the film, like these hollow places full of memories or whatever, because we didn't give them a proper closing or that respect of like, your time is done in this space. Let's end.
I just got goosebumps.
Yeah, seriously. That was
awesome. And then like, that's so, it's so realistic. And it's like, honestly, probably if we did that in life with like spaces and also like ourselves, like we'd probably be like a lot healthier and have like a lot more healing in a lot of places. So I thought that was so cool. I wish I would have gotten that maybe like on my own. But after I read that, I was like, what? That's freaking cool. I was like, what a like a cool way to honor like something having existed and those memories and experiences. And then, yeah, I freaking loved it. I had a blast. I was shocked by how freaking funny it was. I felt like I laughed more than like I was touched.
Yeah.
But on your point about the quest, I really like to listen to what people are saying when I leave the theater. And I think I saw this last Friday. You know, a few people, and maybe they're not as fans of the medium or whatever. Like, oh, this is just like Studio Ghibli or whatever. And like, I do like see that because it's the side quest you go to meet people. A big inspiration for the film was, I mean, and we heard the soundtrack on it, which when that played, I loved it. Is that they had Kiki's Delivery Service.
Yep. Yeah.
And I was like, which is one of my favorite animated movies. Oh, yeah. And I was like, this movie is great. I was like, they know what I like. It had cats. It had everything.
Yeah, they talked cats. They made a reference, right, to the Cat Returns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were. It was very referential, which was nice. And then, I mean, that was what the people were saying sort of when I left was like, oh, it sort of has like the same sort of, it was just trying to be Studio Ghibli. I was like, yeah, but I was like, Studio Ghibli just does like very effective storytelling. So like, and it like takes you on a journey of like what these movies are about, which is like life, who you meet, who you touch. And like, I was like, it's the theme. I was like, so
big beauty and nature thing is in both of their themes, I guess.
Yeah. Definitely would give it like also probably like a 95, but like top movies of the year. But I think it really captures like the experiences of like when Suzume meets all those people.
Yeah.
It feels so impactful.
Yeah.
And it's a nice like reminder to really enjoy like moments with people you probably will never see again, but they can't like have an impact and be meaningful. And even like remembering to like maybe make an effort to see those people again.
Yeah.
Like it was just like, these films really encapture like the life experience and like the easy, the great parts, but also the very difficult parts. And I just think it does that so well.
Yeah.
It was just so good.
That's what I loved about the ending too. In the semi post credit thing where like they show her going back with her aunt to like see all these people on their way back. She's like singing karaoke with like the bar owner and all that stuff. Like I really enjoyed that. That was another part that got the waterworks going a little bit.
Yeah.
When everything's coming back together. And that element of the story too, which is like, I feel like always sort of present in the background, but comes to a head towards the end, is like her whole relationship with her aunt and like how difficult that is for like an adoptive parent and all of those things. And like those like genuine feelings of like almost selfishness that I'm sure every adoptive parent has, where it's like, my life would be totally different if I wasn't basically forced to get you.
Yeah.
But like no one would say that because like it's like you do still love them, feel proud of them, which is like what she says to Suzume during it. And I love that part of it. Really liked, especially a lot of the transition scenes between Ever After and real life, like when she goes and meets herself again and like her, she's in like the snow and then going back into like this big tranquil environment and like her finding out that it was not when she was a kid, her seeing her mom, but it was actually herself. Like all these things, like I really, really enjoyed so much of this. And I love that cat was great. The Daijin, right?
Daijin. Yeah.
Dude, fucking scary at first, very cute later on.
I was so confused by that cat. Like the whole movie, I was like, I do not know what to make of this little mischievous creature.
Yeah. But very cute later on.
And yeah.
Like when it, I guess not really died, but like.
Kind of. I mean.
A little bit.
Immortalized.
Died. Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah. But like, I was like, no, fucking not the cat.
I know.
Take the man. Get him back out there. But yeah, I think definitely as far as the, his movies goes, Shin Kai's movies go, definitely similar structurally to both his previous ones, which is maybe like the only knock, but it's like, it's not really a knock.
Yeah. You know? No, I'd have this still behind Your Name, which I think will be hard for him to top.
So hard to beat.
But I think I do have this ahead of Weathering with You and 5 Centimeters Per Second. So I'd have it number two out of the movies I've seen from him.
Mm-hmm. Weathering with You, another big like sort of nature and how it impacts people mood.
Yeah.
Where like the whole thing is like how much that can affect like a human's mood. And
yeah, the rain was beautiful.
Dude, so
good. Looks so good.
So good. He loves rain.
Yeah.
Big rain guy.
I mean, after every door closed, there was rain.
Yeah. Rain and rainbows, loves rain more than anything. I thought of their note ahead on this was like, you know, an anime is going to be really good once you hear those crickets. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like once everything, it's like hot Landscape. And you hear those little cricket sounds in the background. It's like, oh, this is going to be a good one. This.
See, I always feel it's once you get one fan service joke, which was him being a chair and asking for her to sit on him.
Yeah.
Which is like, it kind of just didn't like fit. And like, that's one of those things where I was like, what is this doing here? And I was like, oh yeah, it's anime. They're gonna have to do it. Like they have to put fan service in there at some point.
Well, something I thought was so funny. I was like, oh great. There's like this like hot hero leading man character. Yeah. And they're like, actually, he's not going to be in the entire film. He's just going to be a chair.
Yeah.
That was really fun. And I love the chair design too. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah. Missing a leg.
Yeah. And just like that hobbling along and like chasing it, the Daijin, I guess, and running around. I really like that. And I just like how he did a really good job of like kind of showing, I guess, like what, like the ghost of a place.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they're in the amusement park.
Or yeah. I thought the amusement park was the best one.
Dude, crazy. And like just because you could kind of feel what he's trying to convey, which is like the previous emotion from these places and all that stuff. Great music too.
Yep.
Unreal music, really good score from the, I'm not sure who did the score on it, but it was awesome. But yeah, that's Suzume. If you haven't seen it yet, we probably spoiled a lot of it for you, but I would highly recommend going to watch it and going to watch the rest of Shinkai's work because it's all incredible. It's really, really good. If I were to pick like a spiritual successor for Miyazaki, it would be him, definitely not Goro.
Yeah, I mean, if you ask Hayao, who the successor, he's not going to say Goro either.
I rewatched Pompoko, kind of recently. It's like just not even the same universe,
dude. No, the worst one is Tales from the RC, where it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Or Earwig and the Witch.
Yeah, that's a Tales from Mercy is like his first ones. But yeah, no, Earwig and the Witch was woof.
I hope they never touch 3D animation ever again.
Never, ever again. That's bad. But now we get to do an anime draft or anime movie draft. We'll have Enrique go first.
Great.
You go second. I'll go third. So yeah, any anime movie can be OVAs, anything you want. So Enrique, Gooch, then me. You're up first.
Okay. My first pick is, I feel like this does count, the original first Pokemon movie.
Oh, yeah.
That's the one where Ash dies, right?
Yeah.
Okay, then yes. That
spoiler alert.
Big time
counts. Dude, that's a big cry movie, too. Oh, my yes. God. The scene where all the Pokemon cry and bring back to life? It's classic.
That one did hurt, even at that age.
Didn't they? I think it was this one, or maybe it was Pokemon 2000, that they had, like, Pikachu's Island Adventure ahead of it or something, right? I love that one too.
Was it also the one
Togepi? I think.
Yeah. Was it also the one where they gave you the gold Pikachu card?
Yes.
Yeah, that was.
I had that.
I think that was like my most treasured item until I was like 19.
I still have a clamshell 2000 somewhere.
But yeah, no, that movie fucking rocks.
Yeah,
really good. And that's one of my favorite endings. And that was like a really good. Obviously, like we're deeper in the weeds now with anime stuff. But like that was one of the most approachable anime was the Pokemon original series. They only just separated Ash and Pikachu, right? Like they only just now parted ways or ended.
No, it's over.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's no longer Ash and Pikachu. It's bringing in someone else.
Yep.
Yeah. Replacing them. It's like when Steve left Blue's Clues.
Yeah.
People can say Pokemon childish or not a good anime. Whatever, I think it is, but
I like
the anime. First one was anime cool. Anime doesn't come close to where it is today, especially in the States, without Pokemon.
Yeah,
it just doesn't.
Like that in Dragon Ball Z, and you can have the same feelings towards both of those things. Where it's like, oh, Dragon Ball Z sucks, all filler, blah blah blah. If like, that wasn't airing on Toonami like every fucking night, like half the people that are in the U.S. that are into anime now would not be.
I mean, one of my first was on the WB was Cardcaptor Sakura.
Yeah,
that was like my first like actual anime. We're watching this, and I watch it every day. I love it. I still watch it now. It's on Netflix.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I didn't even realize it was anime. Like, I didn't realize Dragon Ball Z and, like, that stuff was anime until I was, like, 10, 11. I was like, oh, I just thought it was a cartoon.
You just thought it was a cartoon because it's like you're watching the dub and it's just, like, all these big jack dudes fighting each other. This has to be an American thing. Like, you just don't even think about it. Pokemon's a great, great choice. And I think the series, especially in its early parts, was really good.
Like, I had them all on VHS.
The scene where they rescue the Charmander with this... fire on his tail going out.
That's like episode like 4.
Yeah, exactly.
Three.
Bulbasaur protecting his entire colony. The Squirtle gang. Like so many good episodes in that. And then Brock just being horny as shit.
Dude.
Nonstop.
My guy.
I was like, now I'm like, I don't think I can hear him say the word breeder anymore. Like, I just feel like
that's taking a different meaning.
So much more different.
It's very breedable.
Yeah. Jesus, I forgot about that. And you know what they always, I only noticed this or put this together recently. In Pokemon, they would have like those little rice trees, right? And Brock would always call them donuts.
Yes.
And I was like, my whole life, I thought like those were just some weird sort of donut. It's just a rice treat. And I remember I saw one in real life. I'm like, that's just rice.
It's just rice.
Rice and seaweed.
The little triangle things.
Yeah. You call them donuts because they didn't know how to do it on the dub, I guess.
Yeah. Well, they changed, like, there's a lot of anime where they changed food to be like American.
Americanized. Foods. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just fucking just say a rice.
He's like jelly donuts.
Yeah. I guess as a kid, I probably would not have understood why he was eating rice.
Yeah.
Just walking around eating a rice cake. I would have been like, what the fuck?
Gooch, you're up.
I'm going to go first pick, dipping in the Ghibli pool. I'm going to go Princess Mononoke.
Mm-hmm. Great choice.
I think it's Miyazaki's greatest work. It really hits all the beats he wants to hit. And it also it's dramatized to a point where even an older crowd can find a lot of enjoyment in it. Yeah. Whereas Ghibli, for the most part, very kids oriented. Mononoke is just incredible and has one of the best dubs I've ever heard.
It does have a really good one.
Billy Crudup and Minnie Driver, Billy Bob Thornton knocked it out of the park. They all took it seriously. It's not a Michael Keaton, Porco Rosso.
Yeah, that's so funny.
Getting a check in the mail kind of performance. They really put their hearts into it. Very good. The score, incredible. The environmentalism, I think, is very well done. Like, the messaging he wants to make is handled perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And there's enough action to keep you really engaged. And Gillian Anderson playing the big mama wolf. Can't forget. Yeah. Been watching a lot of X-Files lately.
Keith David was the big ass boar. John DiMaggio plays voices Bender and many other anime voices was also in that too.
Yeah, but Mononoke is just, I think that's my go-to when someone asks, like, what's an anime film for me to start? I always kind of go Mononoke because it is a little bit more accessible.
Yeah, and easy to understand as far as if you're an adult.
There's very fantastical elements there, but it's talking animals.
Yeah.
And, you know, Spirit of the Forest, that's kind of, you can think of that.
Yeah.
Versus like something like Akira is very like over the top and, you know, has a lot of anime shit in it. Where I don't know if, you know, you can recommend that to someone just getting into the medium.
First timer, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, Mononoke.
That's a great pick. That's one of my favorites. I think that's my second favorite Ghibli movie. Which means I get to draft my first. I get Spirited Away, number one. Spirited Away, I think, like, one of the most, not just, like, critically acclaimed anime movies, because, like, it won all those awards, like, when it came out in the Western world. But also just, like, one of the best animated movies ever. Super easy to understand. One of the coolest little mini worlds that I think Miyazaki put together.
Yeah.
Like, that entire house and all those little working parts on the side. The little, like, fucking ash things dancing with the rat with a mouse and all that, and even just like the general creature tries to give everyone the gold and all that. Mm-hmm. Everything about it is just so great dub and great obviously sub, right? Like original voices. Really awesome movie, and another one where it's like a really cool journey, which I always love that in all of these. And another moment where like you can't do something like that live action. Like that's so fantastical, so colorful, so like imaginative. Like you can't do that.
Well, they're doing it on the stage now.
Yeah.
Which I don't understand how that works, but I'm kind of interested to see, actually.
That would be more interesting to me than watching some CGI mess.
Oh, yeah. No, and it probably, absolutely not.
Because it's that the creativeness of actually being able to make something is in like a physical form and makes you think different because you have these constraints as opposed to CGI that's like, here's what you asked for. It looks a little weird, but it's what you
don't have any more money to make anything else. Yeah. We're not on schedule. We're not this. Like, it's
just, when did you first see Spirited Away?
Like how old were you? I was probably like 11, 12, something.
Scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
When I first saw it. Scared the living shit out of me.
Yeah, no, that was not one for the faint of heart.
It wasn't just the ghouls. It was like when she...
The lady herself was
when her parents
shit.
Turned into the hogs, I was like, what the fuck? Yeah. I was terrified.
Yeah,
that and Scooby-Doo Zombie Island, both traumatic for me. But now I do love Spirited Away now. So
Jeepers Creepers is it for me. I watched that movie way too young on TV, and that scared the shit out of me. Never recovered. And after Spirited Away, I have some movies that I have like physically ranked above it, but I'll go with Akira because Akira is so influential to so many cinema. Things.
Yeah, everything. Like, to the movie
not just anime.
Industry.
Yeah, to the entire movie industry is like influenced by bits of Akira, especially in the sci-fi department. Like Matrix borrowed from it. Like Kanye made an entire song based off of Akira. So many different movies and shows and animes and everything is like has like a kind of focal point from Akira, and not even just like the storyline part of it. Like fucking the Duffer Brothers said that they inspired like Tetsuo, right? Was an inspiration for Eleven and the child Espers. But it's so influential for everything in sci-fi, and it's so good, easy to watch.
It kind of made the cyberpunk genre. That was a big...
That and Ghost in the Shell were the two,
I think, that did it. Defining moment for that.
Yeah, and it's, again, just so, so influential to everything, and such a good watch, too. It's just fucking animated beautifully for that era. It's gorgeous. Obviously, the motorcycle slide, we've been talking about it way too much.
Yeah. I mean, the Akira slide is...
The little cool.
It's just cool. It hits every single time you see it in a movie or a show. It's like... It's fucking awesome. Yeah. And I love it. I get it on my TikTok feed all the time. Just people putting edits together of Akira slides. Always ends with the most recent one, the Kiki Palmer one. I think that might be the best one in life.
That was
they
so
nailed
cool.
it. I mean, Jordan Peele fucking nailed it.
Yeah.
The whole style. I mean, that animation was it's so far ahead of its time.
Yeah.
80s, like that's 80s animation. You think back to the 80s and what was being made, like Little Mermaid. You go back and watch Little Mermaid and then watch Akira. Came out same. One year apart. Akira was 88, Little Mermaid 89. So that was the year my sister was born. And Akira is just miles ahead in terms of...
You want to drop her social too while we're here?
What?
You want to drop your sister's social?
No. My sister probably is listening though.
Shout out.
So Spirited Away and Akira for me. Gooch, you're back up.
I'm going to go... And like you said, I'm not going to go highest rated... biggest scores or anything like that. I'm just going to pick what I really, really like.
Yeah.
Tough, but I want to get it, and I don't know if it'll fall back to me. I'm going to go Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah,
I love Ghost in the Shell. Kind of in the same vein as Akira, where it's just, I mean, it's so influential.
Matrix.
The Matrix, is it a complete ripoff?
Yeah.
It's for you to decide, but I think... What's her name? Now I'm forgetting her name.
Who, Major?
Yeah, Major.
It's just Major.
Yeah. I thought she had a last name.
I think she does. I just called her the Major.
Yeah, the Major is one of the coolest female lead action stars ever. Like, she's so badass. Just badass. Like, it's so fucking cool. The influence on the sci-fi genre, you watch it and you're just like, this is just shit that every single sci-fi movie ripped off for the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even cyberpunk, you see so much in that cyberpunk that you saw in Ghost in the Shell, or even the character of the Major, Alita Battle Angel, which we thought was a pretty decent movie. That's Alita's more or less. How close is she to the Major? Pretty close.
Well, Alita is based on an 80s manga.
Yeah, but
I get what you're saying.
Design.
Yes. But yeah, no, Ghost in the Shell, and not one that could work in live action. Very much proven with Scarlett Johansson's little bout.
I just don't think of in
a white woman.
Americans can remake movies like Ghost in the Shell. That's not what for us
not
to
for
do.
For them.
I don't think
Hollywood can't do it.
Yeah, not for us, I think.
Like one in 50 anime can work in live action.
Yeah, and even maybe. Then, I'm trying to think of every anime adaptation I've seen, and they're almost all bad.
There's some that I think could work, and they've tried them. I still think Death Note works perfectly in live action.
That was good. That was solid.
But they didn't do a great job with it.
They did a Kenshin one. It was okay.
Actually, the Kenshin one was good.
Solid.
But it was made in Japan, and it's like feudal era, samurai movie. There's really nothing.
The Full Metal Alchemist one, I know they some anime circles really like it. I didn't like it at all.
That's the one that came out 2 years ago?
Yeah.
I didn't see it.
I didn't like it at all. But that's just me.
Yeah, no. So Ghost in the Shell. I think most people, if they've seen one anime movie, it's either Ghost in the Shell or Akira.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, it's always streaming somewhere.
Yeah.
Actually, is it streaming anywhere right now?
Very cool movie. Enrique, you got back-to-back.
Great. So I'll do my Studio Ghibli pick, and it is my personal, I can watch it anytime. Me and my partner at home, that's one of his favorite movies. So I'm always yes, let's watch this. It's Kiki's Delivery Service.
Yeah, man. It's so good.
Another incredible voice acted cast. Everyone's so good. And then it's just it's nice to do one where the stakes aren't as high. Mm-hmm. So for example, I just, funny enough, for the first time saw Howl's Moving Castle. I really just put it off.
Too, yeah.
Which I mean, what the hell's going on there? I was through the movie, I was what is this plot? I was and then at the end, the Scarecrow's the prince.
Yeah.
And then I was oh, we solved the war. And I was what is this?
Yeah.
I absolutely loved it in every moment of it. But I was what is this right now? Mm-hmm. This was out of the box. So on the very opposite end of the spectrum, Kiki's Delivery Service is so straightforward.
Yeah.
And it's just very so sweet. Lost, that there's sort of a touching loss of innocence / growing up element. And freaking Osono is so freaking great. So warm. Everyone's so warm, so friendly. And it's almost like a very just like realistic telling of like the slight ups and downs of life.
Yeah.
And it's just so, so touching. And the soundtrack.
Great.
The soundtrack. City's beautiful. Soundtrack's incredible. Phil Hartman as Gigi.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is. And even like with
Kristen Dunst in it.
Freaking Howl's Moving Castle. What is like making like this non-human character, like some like New York, like Brooklyn, like yeah. the voice.
Oh, he's talking
character.
About the Billy Crystal.
Billy Crystal.
Billy Crystal is the little ember.
Yeah. I was like, why is this a reoccurring choice for these movies? But I mean, I loved it. Phil Hartman and Gigi was so great. He's like, first, don't panic.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's just so great. I could watch that anytime.
Yeah. That's a great pick. Man, I forgot Janine Garofalo in that voice cast too. Shit.
And then my pick after that, something I saw recently, and I absolutely loved visually and then soundtrack wise, blew me out of the water.
I think I know what you're going to say. Can I guess it?
Yeah.
Is it Belle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I freaking loved Belle.
I still haven't seen Belle, which is very, it's like one of those things where I just keep like scrolling past it.
Putting
and I'm
it
like,
off.
I need to watch it. And I want to watch it in sub. And if you want to watch something in sub, it means you cannot have your phone out. You can't have any work going.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I need to lock away 2 hours and then just really dive into it.
Okay, well, I'm going to tell you something. You should wait until it goes back into some theater somewhere. The experience visually was out of this world. And then the soundtrack, because it's sort of a music-based story.
It's music-based?
Yeah.
See, I fucking love music.
Yeah, so basically, short story about the plot. A young girl, there's like this big virtual world everyone is in, and she's like some sort of shy girl, but in the world she's like a superstar like performer.
Mm-hmm.
And not in like a like K-pop like pop star kind of way, in like a here's my beautiful voice, I'm gonna sing you a ballad.
Okay.
So that's like sort of like the main concept, but then there's like this very cool IRL high stakes kind of like slow burn mystery that happens. But visually it's stunning, the music is beautiful, and you do sort of get that like there's sort of, it's like a weird action thriller mystery subplot that's kind of weaves in really well with the music. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It was so, so great. I saw it in theaters. I think I saw it in IMAX even. Stunning. It was stunning.
So this sounds like Sword Art Online, except good.
Yeah.
Well,
but yeah, no, I'm definitely going to check it out at some point. Just like haven't gotten to it.
You're back up?
Oh, I am back up. I got my pick picked out. I'm going back to the Ghibli well. This was in our 80s movie draft, I think, late 80s. And damn. I did pick it, and early 80s. I did it in the 1980 to 84 draft. People were very mad that I picked it, but I'm going back to it. Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind. I love really that good. Movie.
Yes.
Not technically Ghibli, but it is.
He was involved.
Yeah, it's Miyazaki's movie, and it's like pretty much kicked him off. Everything he believes in, it is the most Miyazaki ever. Because it is entirely about environmentalism and like war, anti-war. Like it's so, everything he wants to say is in that movie.
Cool sci-fi shit in that too, as far as like.
Yes, like the design of the bugs are very cool. Yeah. You got a female lead who's like, you know, going to beat all the bad guys. Like it's just a very enjoyable watch. And not only that, I think it might be my favorite out of any of the soundtracks.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I actually go to sleep with it quite often. I really love that movie. And another one where it's just like, it came out in 1984 and they're animating like that. Like it's incredible. Every single shot in that movie looks like it's a painting.
Yeah.
I think anime said this is a medium where like technological innovations isn't helpful.
Yes. Mm. No, I agree. And then we've started to get there because, you know, people always ask, why do they not do hand drawn versus why do they do so much CG animation now? It's just cheaper.
Yeah.
It's cheaper versus like paying a ton of workers to go frame by frame and draw every single panel.
Mm-hmm.
That's just as simple as it gets. But when you have I wish they would take the time to do it because it's so noticeable and it makes such a big difference.
Mm-hmm. I agree. All right. So Nausicaa off the board. I'll go back to Ghibli as well. My Neighbor Totoro.
There we go.
My Neighbor Totoro. I mean, that's one of the
He's the mascot.
Classics. Yeah.
He's the anime mascot.
The mascot of the most successful anime movie studio in the entire world. My Neighbor Totoro. I think that's another one where, like, you want to talk about a good, like, vibes movie. Yeah. Like, that is one you can watch any mood you're in. You can watch My Neighbor Totoro and you can get it. Good, great child leads, I guess, too, which is a kind of a classic for him. I love just the design of Totoro and like all his mannerisms, all those things, the fucking goat, cat bus, Like everything about it is just great. And that's another movie heavy on the crickets. We're just talking about.
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of crickets.
Lines. And I just, just that little haze in rural Japan. And like, I just loved everything about it. Another great environmental movie. I just really, it's, you could like really pick out of a hat with anything like made by Miyazaki and like you could grab a great movie. But I think My Neighbor Totoro is, I think, my third favorite. Behind Spirited Away and Mononoke.
Did you ever see the when South Park did a Totoro reference, like dead on, like shot for shot?
No,
Totoro. It's That's very funny. It's funny. Like Carbon like climbs up on a Cthulhu, and like it's like the exact shot of when she climbs up on Totoro. Oh my god, it's like right here, and it's like literally beat for beat. Like he says like all the same words and stuff. Like the monster acts. It's so funny.
I wouldn't imagine for some reason. Parker and Stone having watched it.
I feel like they are actually massive anime guys. With how much they did an anime episode. Tweak and Craig.
I think I watched that.
The Yaoi episode. They shipped them together.
I'm gonna follow up My Neighbor Totoro with The Tale of Princess Kaguya. That's another one of my favorite ones because the watercolor design on everything. Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous movie. Also just really liked the storyline was amazing. And I think that there was one scene in that where like they all like the Buddha and all these things like come down from like heaven down to like meet Princess Kaguya. It is one of the most gorgeous shots of anything I've seen in my entire life. And the music they got going too, incredible. It's just one of the more unique anime movies I've ever watched. That watercolor design of everything and like just like the kind of general brightness of the entire movie is just awesome. It's one where like I don't think a lot of not like hardcore anime fans, but people are like, yeah, I've watched a lot of Studio Ghibli stuff. Like they wouldn't have watched this or like My Neighbor, the Yamadas and like all that stuff. But Kaguya, I really, really, really liked. And that's another tearjerker one. Big time tearjerker one.
Grave of the Fireflies is kind of along those lines of like.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
The dark side of Studio Ghibli.
It's like, that one is rough.
Yeah. We're like, these are going to hurt
a little.
Yeah.
There's something funny about the release of Grave of Fireflies. They did a double debut with another movie. I gotta find it. Go, keep going though.
You're up.
Oh, I am up. I kind of want to find this real quick.
I get to always talk.
Oh, about. Yeah, that's what it was. They did Totoro and Grave of the Fireflies.
Oh,
double
yes.
feature. That was how they debuted him. They debuted him as a double feature.
That's really harsh.
I guess I hope Graves was first, and then you have a.
I don't know which
one. Yeah, you get back on the high. Like
yeah, there's a little better get down in low. The second half.
With yeah, you end Totoro. Your total experience on a high note with Totoro. I prefer that. And that one of the that's going to be with Oppenheimer. We should do the same thing. Like watch Oppenheimer first, then Barbie.
There you go.
Get yourself back out of the ditch. Yes, I'm Gucci back up.
Is your name still on the board?
It is still on the board.
I'm going to take it. I have
that's
to take
my
it.
Next choice.
Yeah, I mean, if it's there. You can't let it fall any farther. Mm-hmm.
I was struggling between that and Kaguya, but I was like, gotta go with the heart. I like Kaguya. Yeah. Like, personal level more.
Your name. Yeah, that movie fucking broke me at the very end. Like, at the very end when they're on the steps. Don't want to spoil anything, but that was like, that's where the waterworks came. It's, you know, you think you could easily, with the way they set this movie up, if you don't know what it's about, basically this boy and girl keep changing play. Like, they switch bodies, like a Freaky Friday kind of way. It keeps happening to them. There's a different movie out there where it becomes very anime-esque and a lot of fan service. And imagine if you woke up in a girl's body, what would you do, basically? But they handle it so well. And the way you get a look into their lives and how they're dealing with their struggles. And like, it's just so well done.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. Like gorgeous. Like the rest of his movies, Mikoto Shinkai again, it's just gorgeous.
Absolutely gorgeous movie. That's great. It's a great pick. Again, I was struggling for that between that one and Kaguya. I was just like, I personally connected with Kaguya more, so I felt like to be true to me. It might not show up as well in the graphic, but I needed to take it.
Yeah, no, take what you want.
Exactly. So, Enrique, you have your last two picks.
Yeah, you kind of messed me up there. Yeah, your name was my next choice. So I'm going to go with my fifth as my fourth, and then I'll figure out my fifth. But I actually love this, and I can understand why it may be a difficult watch for some people, but
I think I've seen that.
Yeah, it was nominated for the Oscars this year, I believe.
Really?
For a soundtrack. Inu O.
How do you spell it?
I-N-U and then dash O.
All right, I'm looking at it.
So the art style is very different than what you would expect from a normal anime movie.
Oh, this looks cool.
And then secondly, the way... So basically, big soundtrack movie. They do a lot of songs as performances. That sort of is their thing.
It says on their wiki, yeah.
Yeah. So, but then like the songs last like 8 minutes, mm-hmm. 9 minutes sometimes I feel, and like it's telling a story, but like it's not like in this, I don't know, it's awesome. Not like where you're like in a movie and you're like, oh, this is progressing the plot. It actually, they're just giving you this repetitive song with like these beats and rhythms and like this weird, like you're not getting a like a here's your plot A, here's this plot, yeah. point, hit plot point. You're just getting a songs, things are happening, and you're like just in it as like a, someone who's experiencing it, as opposed to being told a story.
Gotcha.
But the music was cool. The art style was really cool. It was just, and I kind of like when things just don't do what you want them to. Like,
yeah,
go yeah. the
other way. Like, yep. force me to like try to enjoy this in a different way. I like to be like made to try to enjoy something different, because I mean, ultimately I'm trying to enjoy things.
Yeah.
This is on Hulu.
It is. Oh, I'm watching it tonight then.
Yeah, the art style looks incredible. Yeah,
it is incredible.
The way they're playing the
really
music
changes.
Yeah, I was gonna say the way it looks when they're playing instruments looks so cool.
Yeah, so I'll do that one. It was very, very cool. It mm-hmm. did force me to like think differently while I watched it, but loved yeah. it. And then I'll do my last one, because I am unfortunately like a big like anime show watcher. Mm-hmm. So I'll film, since I don't have, really have one. I'll do the recent Jujutsu Kaisen Zero yeah, movie as my okay, final pick.
No, that was a really good one.
Fuck. I mean, I do have to say, I have a Gojo.
Are you caught up on the? Are you caught up on the manga?
Yeah, I am. I watch a YouTube video that tells me everything that happens in the manga.
Spoilers. Gojo's finally out of that fucking box.
Didn't you tweet yesterday?
Yes.
I wanted to tweet back to you. I was like, did you see what happened?
And someone did spoil it for me, and then I went back and I checked the chapter on my Shonen app, and I was like, fuck.
It was finally right when you tweeted that. I had like just seen like the spoiler video of like what was going to happen, and I was like, that's really funny because the timing of that,
because it's been like 3 fucking years.
I mean, he hasn't been in it in like over like 70% of the show, of the manga anymore.
It's insane. He designed maybe one of the coolest characters ever in anime. Like, the guy is just cool as fuck. It's
awesome.
Like, yeah. He's just vibes out the window.
Yeah.
And he just puts him in a, he literally puts him in a box. It's like, not a metaphorical, like, writer's box. No, he put him in a literal box.
He kind of reminds me of, what's his name from Naruto?
Kakashi?
Kakashi-sensei, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, unfortunately, he's just, like, the ex machina for the show, where, like, he can resolve any problem realistically.
Yes,
so
that's fair.
They have to, he has to be away.
Yeah, that show, that anime, I think has one of the coolest intro and outro songs ever. Like, mm-hmm. anime, so goddamn good.
Yeah, the Paradise. Yeah. Paradise, so good. The way they animated was really, really awesome, too.
Yeah. Really cool. That and Chainsaw Man, two great exit and intro.
The Chainsaw Man was awesome because they did a different one for every single episode.
Yeah.
They did a different outro for every episode.
Yeah. The intro, I think, was funny too, where it's just like random, just like,
oh, just a million American movie references. Yeah, it's all Western movie references because that's all the guy watches.
Yeah. No, I love that. I rewatched Chainsaw Man the other day after the dub came out. I like watching a dub and sub. Like, there's differences, but like, I feel like there's different ways you can enjoy it when the dub versus sub.
Yeah.
And man, that scene where the what's her name just like gives herself up to the monster completely
yeah.
at the end of the season was so, that was rough. That was another rough one.
It only gets way more depressing.
Everything is like, don't like anyone in that show. They're not afraid to kill absolutely everyone.
Oh, yeah.
No. Yeah, I got that vibe very early on.
Don't get too attached.
When they had the fucking people just killing everybody in like the agency. Gucci, your last pick.
My last pick. I'm gonna go TV show to OVA too. This is a kind of a very deep cut. You literally cannot rent it anywhere. You have to, instead of surfing the internet, you have to sail the internet, if you know what I mean, to find this movie. Or you can pay $60 for the Blu-ray on Amazon. And it is Samurai X Trust and Betrayal. It is a theoretical prequel to the Rurouni Kenshin series.
Okay.
But it doesn't feel like Rurouni Kenshin at all. If you've watched Rurouni Kenshin, it was a big anime in the 90s. It's about a wandering swordsman post-war, but it's very, very lighthearted, like almost to its own fault, to a fault. Like, it is very lighthearted. But the movie is about him during the war, him like how he was in slavery. Like, he was a slave as a child, freed from slavery, trained as a swordsman. It's just beautiful. I think if I had to pick like my number one actually highest rated anime movie I've ever watched, this would be my pick. Wow. It is incredible. Soundtrack's incredible. The dub is incredible. The story is beautiful. It's one that would work perfectly actually in live action because it's just very grounded. It is a gorgeous, gorgeous movie.
The reviews for this are crazy too. I was just reading some of them. Like,
it just isn't anywhere. It isn't anywhere. And the only way I saw it was I was up late, you know, watching Toonami one night on like a weekend, and they did a premiere of it. At, it was like 2006, something like that. And I was like, what the fuck is this? Because the way it opens is it opens with like a 3-minute, 4-minute monologue from one of the main characters. And he's got this really cool voice. And like, he's talking about the world. He's talking about slavery and hunger. And like, it's just, it's insane. I will recommend it to anyone. So that's Samurai X, Trust and Betrayal.
That's interesting to know. And I'm going to try and sail my way to that as well. All right. My last pick. I'll just keep the tradition alive, I guess, for this last pick, and I'll go with Mugen Train. I think Mugen Train was one of the coolest movie experiences I've ever had. And not only, like, it's very difficult for me to find anime movies, especially ones based off of shows, where I think they're like as good as some of the ones like from the older animation style, where it's all like you were saying, like hand drawn stuff. This one, not hand drawn, but man, it is one of the most gorgeous and fluid and beautiful, put together anime movies I've ever seen. Like, and especially cause they go through all these different styles. Like they're going from like fire to water to lightning, like all this shit. And then like the actual train, like the monsterification of it and all of those things. So goddamn well done. Crazy good. And it had my theater bawling like a baby when Rengoku met his fate. Man, RIP to a seriously real one.
The best boy.
Dude, unbelievable. And his moves were the coolest of all.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the fire.
Yeah, his fire moves were absolutely insane. And every that's another one with really, really good villains, that series. Like, I loved every single demon design from, like, I forget, what do they call their, like, core four or whatever, the ones, the numbers?
The upper moons, lower moons.
Yeah, they are creepy as fuck, including the one that ends up besting Rengoku. But that one was really good. Even seeing, like, Inosuke crying, like, all that stuff.
Yeah.
You hate the horny one, right? Zenitsu?
I think he stinks.
Yeah.
He stinks. He falls asleep.
Every enemy needs a horny guy.
I love him.
Every enemy needs a horny guy.
He's good.
And scared.
He's good once in a blue moon. He steps up to the plate.
And he just does the first stance over and over again.
He's got the coolest moves.
Yeah.
Like whenever he like breaks them out, it's fucking awesome.
Coolest move. It's like one move that he just does over and over again until it works. That was that in the anime series too. The whole spider section, that gave me the heebie-jeebies. I could not believe. But that was a great arc.
I've been on, I mean, every Sunday, first thing I'll do is watch the new episodes because there's two new out right now. First one was an hour and it was epic.
I didn't know it was going to be an hour. I was like, I thought I clicked on something else. Like, I thought I clicked on like an OVA they had uploaded or something like that. I was like, oh, wait, this is actually episode one of season three. It's going to be an hour long.
And it was drawn like it was like they worked on it for like 5 years.
Yeah, it looked like a movie.
It felt like a film.
I love how Zenitsu is just horny for his sister, though.
No one is animating right now, I don't think, like UFO table. I don't think it's in terms of like you brought up like CG animation, they do it better than anyone.
Yeah. I think it's just because like there's a level of like blockiness with CGI and anime where like, and they do this sometimes even in like the movie review in Suzume, like they'll have like a random like when she drove past the train tracks, like the thing, the guardrail, whatever comes down and it's just randomly 3D.
Yes.
And like, it just looks clunky and like it never quite is as fluid as it is. I don't know if they just up the frames per second when they do Demon Slayer, but like everything is just like super, super smooth.
The 3D Demon Slayer scenes are unreal. Out of this world. Yeah. No one does it like that.
There's one shot where they do like in Mugen Train where they just do like a full sweeping shot of the train and like it being like alive and like it just looks so good.
Yeah.
Oh, that another scene from that movie that movie where the kids go into his soul and like they just pure and when the one girl gets burned by Rengoku's and like the other kids are just like, we can't destroy this guy's soul. He's too bright and beautiful and all these things. That was a good one. But yeah, so here's our teams. Enrique has the first Pokemon movie, Kiki's Delivery Service, Bell, Inuyo, in the Jujutsu Kaisen movie. Gooch, you have Mononoke, Ghost in the Shell, Nausicaa in the Valley of the Wind, Your Name, Samurai, X, Trust and Betrayal. I have Spirited Away, Akira, My Neighbor Totoro, Tale of Princess Kaguya, and Mugen Train. I think these are good teams. I can watch every one of these any day of the week.
Any ones that you guys didn't get to shout out?
I actually wanted to ask about the view because I haven't found it, so I haven't been able to watch it. But Perfect Blue, have you seen that?
Oh yeah,
I've been dying to see it.
It's Tashi Kone, baby.
Is it as good as everyone says?
Yeah, I mean, did you like Black Swan?
Yeah, I mean,
you'll fucking love Perfect Blue.
Yeah,
because I mean, it's another one where it's like, is this a homage or is this a ripoff? Mm-hmm. And but yeah, no, it's great. It's not like the Akira or like the early animes we talked about before where the animation is like ahead of its time. It's very much of its time. You can tell it was made in the 80s, but in terms of story, it's I mean, it is a horror, like psychological thriller, which is unique for the medium.
Yeah.
It is very, very cool. I do recommend only do sub though. The dub is not good.
The ones I missed were like I really like The Wind Rises, 5 centimeters per second, which we talked about. Promare, which is awesome. And then like the one of the OGs, Castle Cagliostro or whatever.
Yeah.
It's an OG. Grave of the Fireflies, which you talked about a little. Ponyo, I think, is a classic.
Ponyo was a nice, like a really good, like
great vibes
when
movie.
We were like advancing in like technology and film. It was great.
That I really like that one. That's another great, great voice dub on that too. That's like Tina Fey, Liam Neeson, like I think Matt Damon has a small part in it, like a bunch of other people. Let's see what else. The Girl Who Left Through Time.
We talked about it before we started and we were watching scenes from it. Dragon Ball Z Broly
was
Dragon
really
Ball Super
good.
Broly, sorry.
Yes.
But Dragon Ball Z Broly is also good.
Yeah, they're both good. But Broly's just a cool character. That's
Broly's just fucking sick. Awesome. I mean, he turns green.
Yeah. From Up on Poppy Hill is a good one.
Oh yeah.
I love Porco Rosso. And I don't know if it's not ironically. It's
a bad Michael Keaton performance, but for some reason the whole movie just kind of works because I mean, it's a flying pig who
returns.
Hates capitalism.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
See, I have all the Pokemon movies down here.
Other ones, if you like music, One Piece Film Red was like just a straight up musical.
Oh, yeah.
Came out last year. The music is awesome in that movie.
The Cowboy Bebop movie is pretty good, too.
That actually was
good. Really good, yeah.
That's the one where they're on Mars and the poison, they're trying to like stop the poison or something, right? Can't remember all of the details, but... and then Howl's Moving Castle, I think if there was a 6-pick, that probably would have been it for me. I think that's one of those ones where I'm like, why doesn't Christian Bale voice act more? Because his voice is
so awesome. Good.
That was his proto Batman too. Like you could tell at certain points in that movie.
Yeah.
Because this is right before they started filming Batman.
And all those characters in that movie were so like specific and unique and weird in like a very real way and like flawed way, but also very like lovable way. I think that's probably like what really won me over the most there.
Whisper of the Heart.
Oh, I love Whisper
really
of the Heart.
Good. That's one like a back-to-back with Kiki's. Like I'm just looking at it right now on my rankings on movierankings.net right next to each other. It's like the same thing.
One of my favorite openings to any movie ever when it opens up with Country Road, but it's not the John Denver version. No, it's the Olivia Newton-John version.
Yeah.
And it's fucking incredible.
And then they have a Japanese version in it too, which is like pretty interesting as well. Only Yesterday I liked. When Marnie Was There was interesting too.
We're just naming Ghibli movies.
Yeah, it is a lot, but like that's the big hitter.
Ghibli shoots like 90%.
Yeah.
So it really is impressive.
Cat Returns, My Neighbor the Umatas, Pompoko. Like Pompoko's rough because like it's not the same feel, but it's whatever. Song of the Sea. I think that's basically it for me.
Yeah.
Rest of the ones are just like smaller things. Oh, Castle in the Sky. I should probably put up there too. Anyway.
Watch more anime.
Yeah, watch more anime. Movies are great too.
Or anime movies in general. They're not always targeted at kids.
Yeah.
You know?
It's especially with all these ones that are all like standalone for the most part, except for our last picks. Like you don't need to watch an entire 50 billion One Piece episodes or something to understand this movie.
Okay. It's only...
Not what are they at 1,000 something now?
Like, 1,072?
Yeah. So you don't need to watch like a shit ton of filler or anything like that, or even like any seasons to watch some of these standalone ones.
It's not filler. It's all relevant.
Dude, people warned me so hard when I started One Piece. Like, dude, it's so much filler. How bad could I watch Naruto? How bad could this be?
It's not filler as much as it is the first 5 minutes and the last 5 minutes of every episode are like, the first 5 minutes is just a recap of what happened the previous episode.
Dude,
and the last 5 minutes are kind of a look ahead of what happened. So if you just kind of hit the middle 15, middle 14 minutes, and you do those 14 minutes every time, flies by.
Dude,
trust
some
me,
of those
you
arcs,
can, you start
though.
Today, you could be done by 2024.
Some of those arcs were so bad. Like, there was one.
Thriller Bark stinks.
Where's the one where they go to, like, heaven?
That one fucking rules. Skypiea rules.
I hated that
Fuck
one.
Fuck off. Skypiea is one of the best. Oh, it's so good. Enel's bitch ass.
It made me
Sanji getting electrocuted and stepping up and lighting a cigarette. He goes, "Thanks, I needed a light."
Oh,
that made me fall off from the series for like a month until I picked it back up. I was like,
you were so put off.
Yeah, I was just like, this is so not what I'm looking for right now, at least from the regular series. Cool characters, though.
Yeah, no,
that guy really loves cool. boobs.
What?
Whoever animated or whoever made
that show.
Yeah. Oh, Oda? Yeah, no, it's because he doesn't know how to draw women.
Yeah, he has no clue. It's just, it's like a stretched
out. He's admitted. He's like, yeah, like if I want to do like a pretty woman, like, I only got it kind of like one pitch.
Yeah. He just, it basically like, it's like the classic 50s bimbo drawing, yeah. except he just like stretched it out yeah, a little
awesome.
Bit.
It's awesome.
It's fucking crazy. But yeah, that was a good episode. Love talking anime. We have to have you back for another anime thing soon. Maybe next time we have a good anime release, we'll have you back on. But yeah, thank you, Enrique, for joining. We'll be back on Thanks Tuesday with a new episode. We have an interview with Ray Romano on that. We'll be reviewing Bo is Afraid. And possibly
Ghosted, the not real movie.
Yeah, the Ghosted, the movie where Chris Evans and Anna de Armas are never on screen actually together. Apparently, that's your theory.
I don't think they were.
We'll find out when we get there. But until then, see you guys on Tuesday.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.